Shire is a leading global specialty biopharmaceutical company with a focus on helping people with life-altering conditions to lead better lives. While Shire's portfolio of ADHD medicines helps patients diagnosed with ADHD, we recognize the need to provide additional support to them and their families. And that's why we at Shire value our local, regional, and international partnerships that are designed to develop and enhance programs to improve the understanding and awareness of ADHD. At Shire, people diagnosed with ADHD have our full attention. To learn more about Shire, visit www.shire.com.
To Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We've got Dr. Charles Parker in the house. We've got a great show for you tonight. Our topic is updated ADHD diagnosing practices and finding a good doctor. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. It is November the 2nd, in the year 2011, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's hard to believe that it's this far in the year, but we are moving right along. Before we get into tonight's topics, a reminder to everybody, if you have not gone to our Facebook page that was just launched a couple weeks ago, please visit us at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio. We're real excited about the site. You can access a list of all of our scheduled shows that are actually in the books. You can go to our wall and you can post a comment. You can actually access archive shows going back, I think, 15 months. You just go there, click on the title, and it will take you to the page and start streaming. And you can even listen to the show live by hitting our live button. We're going to have some other things that are going to be coming soon. We're getting ready to do some contests and some promotional type things. So, again, if you haven't been there, go check it out and like us. We'd love to hear from you. We've been talking about this for a long time, but the annual CHAD conference is around the corner. It starts next Thursday, November the 10th, in Orlando, Florida. For more information on that, go to chadd.org. If you're there, look me up. I know I'll be walking around a blue blazer for part of the time. I haven't quite figured out my attire for the rest of it, but I'd love to hear from any of you that are listening. I'd like to hear your comments, your thoughts, things that we can improve the show, your favorite shows, et cetera. So please track me down. I also kind of want to highlight tonight, I've been doing this for a period of time, and I'm starting to find we got packages of shows that are worth listening to. And last week we had Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Catherine Ellison talking about how to find good information on the net. And I think that for our listeners out there, if you haven't listened to that show, you might go check it out, because I think it kind of will lend itself to tonight's conversation, particularly towards the end as we're talking about how to find a good doctor. Again, tonight we're with Dr. Charles Parker. We're talking about diagnosing ADHD and finding a good doctor. And next week, by the way, we're going to be talking about meds and getting them right. And I'll honestly tell you, I have been trying to look for somebody to come on to the show and talk about this particular topic about getting meds right. Looking at it, it's kind of an art, not a science, and I have searched high and low, and I ran into Dr. Parker, and he's absolutely perfect in his writings, and it's going to be a great show, so please join us next week. Let's see. Well, I think that's all our announcements. Real quick, Dr. Charles Parker is a medical director at CoreSight, which provides both personal consultation and professional training to address the many challenges present in psychiatry today. And the last 10 years, incredible neuroscience evidence about about communication networks between the brain and the endocrine system and the immune system encourages a complete rethinking of many psychiatrics labeling stuff. So Dr. Parker is a prolific writer, and I want to highlight he's got a new book out called ADHD Medication Rules, Paying Attention to the Meds for Paying Attention. Again, we're going to get into real detail with that next week, and we're going to talk more about his bio, but I want to jump in and say just welcome, Dr. Parker. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
There's two big areas that I kind of want to cover tonight. I know we've got a limited amount of time, but in preparing for the show, the summary of the show was really entitled, Imagine Walking to the Emergency Room with Chest Pains. The doctor asks you a few questions and rushes you in for bypass surgery without ever running a test to see if you've got GERD or anything else. And in ADHD treatment, so much of the past has been just kind of like taking a look at you and making a diagnosis. And can you comment on this? Does this make a lot of sense today in terms of ADHD? I mean, should they just be looking at appearance, or should they be running the test? And from your perspective, with technology today, what should we be looking at?
Well, first of all, it's going on pandemically, what you talked about. People come into an office and they make diagnoses. In fact, I'm going to have a blog post, which I hope everybody can comment on. I'm going to ask, what is the stupidest question you've been asked and been given a diagnosis of ADD on? I mean, it's unbelievable. And it's pandemic. We have a lot of laughs. It's just there's too much pain behind it because people get overlooked and ignored. Now, you know, questions like, do you fiddle with your keys? Do you get up and leave a movie when you're halfway through the movie? I mean, these are ridiculous questions that have no bearing whatsoever on brain function. They have something to do with appearances and behavior, but behavior and appearances are way too superficial. And It really follows the metaphor you're using of, you know, making a diagnosis, a deep diagnosis with stimulant medications as an indication with something as completely superficial as behavior.
You know, it's back in April, we had a local neurologist here that has ADD and diagnoses those with ADHD, Jose Fordada, and it wasn't on the show, but I was talking to him before the show, and he said, you know, I got my medical degree back in the 80s, and nothing was taught on ADHD. It was an elective. And he said, you know, I saw it after and kind of learned about it and stuff like that. But it seems to me that a lot of the mental health community that's out there right now actually might have an education from the 80s, and a lot's changed in the last 10 years, right?
Well, I think it's changed a lot, but I think even though it's changing and people are actually paying attention to diagnostic protocols, and I think my medical colleagues are doing the best they can with the really superficial protocols that are in place, approved of by the American Psychiatric Association and the diagnostic coding system. I mean, you tell me, would you come into a diagnostic situation and be treated for, you know, you're a blonde, or you have red hair,
uh-huh,
or you're wearing a blue suit? I mean, all those appearance questions are really pandemic. The whole idea that you're hyperactive, inattentive, are combined, they're all appearance questions. They have nothing to do with brain function. They're derivatives of brain function, but they really don't get down to what the prefrontal cortex is actually doing. And as a result, the public is really mad with psychiatry. They're mad at psychiatrists. They're mad at the meds because, in fact, there's such an abundance of imprecision. In fact, what's going on is this labeling process is extremely ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you tell me what the coding system is for hyperactivity. I mean, what's hyperactive and what's not?
Uh-huh.
I mean, what's inattentive and what's not?
Mm-hmm.
And so not only do we have an ambiguous diagnostic system that even the best doctors are trying to follow,
mm-hmm,
but the main problem behind that, the real key underlying that whole problem, is the denial of the ambiguity in the first place. It's amazing. You know, it's like we're using stuff that doesn't make any sense, but we're okay with it.
Uh-huh.
And the public is not okay with it, I can tell you that. The public, the most frequent question I have when I do a whole evaluation, I ask a lot of questions about brain function. And, you know, they say, well, let me bring it down to this. Am I hyperactive, inattentive, or combined? I'm like, you just missed the point. I'm not even thinking that way. That has no relevance to what I'm treating. I'm treating an executive function disorder. I'm not treating attention. Attention is something you can see from the outside. I'm looking at brain function, and is the brain functioning correctly from an executive function point of view?
So when you're sitting down and doing some diagnosis, how do you go about it, and what are you looking for, you specifically?
Well, I do want to thank Eamon. I know Eamon's considered by some to be a pariah. You know, he's a very good pitch man. He has a lot to say that's really very effective. I mean, he does it very well. It looks like a pitch because it has some things that are really kind of anti-scientific associated with them, like Ring of Fire and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, looking at brain scans, and I worked with him. I opened his D.C. office in 2003 and ran that office for 4 years. So we had literally thousands of people come through there. I saw thousands of scans. We had a very good experience. And when you sit in the room with somebody and you're working with them and you have their brain scan in front of you, it really changes the way you think about brain function. You can no longer just talk to a person and try to guess from their appearance what's going on with their brain. It's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense at all. So, yes, we still try to figure out what's going on specifically with executive function if you think about what the prefrontal cortex actually does. And I'll try to summarize this real quickly. But the bottom line is the prefrontal cortex is really good at synchronizing acting and thinking. And if we are doing well in our lives, we see something, there's the problem, we solve it, and we go on.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't synchronize thinking and acting, and we are desynchronized based on a variety of variables, which I won't take the time to go into, we could do several things, like act without thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's an executive function problem. And then we might, and this is the one that's most frequently missed, and I write about it extensively. I've got YouTube videos on it. This one is missed all over the place. It's frequently thought of as OCD. Thinking without acting. That's a desynchronization of thinking and acting. And then a person who is somewhat consciously aware of these problems will back off from the whole thing and say very, very clearly, in different contexts, I'm not going to think, I'm not going to act. Please shut up and leave me alone. I don't want to do anything. I'm going to be a hermit, and I'm just going to live my life this way because it's just too complicated. I can't deal with it.
So am I hearing you say that you're taking a look at some of this biomedical evidence and some scans and talking to the person and really trying to understand the executive function to get to an accurate diagnosis, as if to say there's so many – if you just look at like the symptoms, if you will, that can lead to a misdiagnosis?
Absolutely. Symptoms have nothing to do with the cause. I mean, well, let me put it this way. They have something to do, but they're very derivatively associated with the underlying cause. I'm into treating causes. I mean, and you know, one of the things we find all the time, apropos of the biomedical aspect, I mean, so frequently missed is the fact that the medications that we're giving for ADD have to pass through the body to get to the mind.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing. I mean, so commonsensical. So we're not going to ask you questions about your body. We're not going to think about your stomach, your gut, your liver, any of that kind of stuff. We're just going to throw these medicines up at the tip of Mount Everest up there in your brain and cross our fingers and hope that it snows right.
Huh.
And to me, that's another big problem, because the meds, which are very predictable if they're used correctly, become very unpredictable when they're used capriciously and without thinking about the whole mind-body connection, what the body that they're actually going through.
So just, I'm having a little bit of an aha here. So am I reading into you by understanding the rest, because the meds have to be absorbed, and if they're not being absorbed properly, they're not actually getting to what you're trying to target. So if you're just making the assumption, you're completely missing the boat.
Totally. You're throwing dirt on the wall. Forget it.
So
it's a waste of time.
So for our listeners, Dr. Park, my hearing is that, okay, so you, as opposed to them showing up and doing this, that one of them is the biomedical evidence is complicated. One, it might be brain scans that's kind of going on, but it's also more a holistic approach to understand what else is kind of going on in the body, so that if we're putting this in there, is it actually getting absorbed and processed correctly in order to get to the point that we need it to get to do what we want it to do?
Yeah, and I want to just change one word, because I'm really,
please,
my favorite word for this is comprehensive as opposed to holistic.
Okay.
Because holistic implies a dichotomy that, you know, I'm not traditional, I'm holistic.
Yep.
And then the holistic guys are not, you know, it goes back and forth. And I think it's very reasonable for any accomplished professional who's thinking deeply about brain science to just approach these matters comprehensively.
Sure.
And comprehensively includes biomedical evidence and data regarding metabolism.
I tell you what, I want to come back to metabolism for a second, because I think that's going to be important for us to touch base on here for next week's show, and get into a little bit more biomedical evidence. But before we go to break, for those that are interested in your book or learning more about you, the best place to go, if you could confirm, is corepsychblog.com, which is corepsychblog.com. Is that?
That's right, Jeff. Thank you.
And again, you can get the book there. You can get the book on Amazon.com. You can also get it off the website and Barnes & Noble's and a couple other places. But if you want to, this is the blog is a great place to go to kind of keep up with what you're doing.
Yeah, we got about 300 pages there. And if you look at the number of links on the pages, we got probably 1,000 pages of exactly what I'm talking about.
Wow. So, everybody, we're going to get into this biomed and metabolism in a second, right after we get back from this break.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
ADHD, is it real? How is it diagnosed? How do I know if I have it or if my children have it? Do you outgrow it? You have questions and we have answers. We're CHAD, a national organization made up of professionals, parents, educators, and, of course, those with ADHD. So if you want real answers to your questions, join CHAD at www.chadd.org or call us at 800-233-4050.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Has your child been diagnosed with ADHD? Is he not fulfilling his potential? Success in Mind can help. We provide assessments that identify a student's learning profile of strengths and challenges. The result? A practical plan of strategies and tools that go beyond medication that parents, teachers, and students can implement together. If your child needs more success, visit Success in Mind at www.success-in-mind.org.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
News, updates, and alerts sent right to your inbox. Sign up now at attentionradio.com. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody. We've got Dr. Charles Parker in the house. We're talking about ADHD diagnosing practices, and soon we'll be talking about finding a good doctor. Before the break, we alluded to talking about comprehensively looking at the patient, and two things that you brought up that I'm kind of curious. Can we talk a little bit about more biomedical evidence, and also can we talk about metabolism as it relates to diagnosing and then how it relates to getting the medications right, which we're going to go into more detail next week.
Well, this is so interesting, and I'll summarize it because I know we're talking more about it next week. But just take the fact that the liver itself has genetic variables. So different medications bounce off the liver at different rates of speed. So if you don't know about the way the liver metabolizes medications, you're just going to throw those stimulants at it and just cross your fingers and hope it works. And all that is measurable now. You can actually measure cytochrome P450 systems to see how the liver is going to handle the medications.
Wow.
And then if you take the guts, I mean, very simple gut questions. You know, from the mouth to the south is the largest immune system in the body. And if you have an immune system problem and your gut is deteriorating in any respect whatsoever, whether you've got GERD or sick at the top at the north end of the gut or you're going diarrhea, constipation, if that gut is not working right, the chances are not only that it's not going to absorb the medication correctly, but that the liver, which is playing catch-up ball in a second-level sewage treatment plant for the gut, it's also constipated, and the meds going to bounce off the liver as well. So what you've got is you've got two main organs there that you have to think about before you're just throwing the medications at the person. And not at the person, but at the diagnosis, at that superficial diagnosis. It's ridiculous.
Wow, fascinating. So when somebody's kind of coming in and you're kind of working over the diagnosis, you're looking at some of these things, but you're doing the brain scan, you're kind of talking to the, are there other medical type things that you look at more specifically, kind of to fine tune or hone in on a precise diagnosis, so it's not like, you know, a sleep disorder or, you know, OCD or something else?
The scan is really an expensive process, and we don't really, it's about $3,000, and we don't really do that often because it just isn't indicated. A lot of times we can ask the questions. We really ask very specific questions about a whole host of biomedical activities to see whether they have an immune system dysregulation, a hormone dysregulation, whether in fact they've responded poorly or well to previous medications. I use the metaphor of chickens and the ranch regarding neurotransmitters. So many people are not even thinking about the fact that meds are chicken catchers. They collect neurotransmitters. They don't put neurotransmitters at the synapse. They collect the neurotransmitters that are there. So if a person's got a biomedical illness, which could be contributed to by an immune system dysregulation, for example, they could have no or very few chickens in the ranch, and you could keep throwing stimulant medications at them till the cows come home, and those big chicken catchers that are going in there are going to come out empty-handed. And that person is not going to get well. We've seen this hundreds of times, not a couple of times. So there's so many people. If you look at my blog post, I've got some posts that have way over 200 comments on people that have tried this and tried that and tried this and tried that, and they haven't asked these basic questions that I'm summarizing very quickly for you right now. If you really understand the questions, which I do go into in great detail in the book, then you're going to really understand some of the variables that need to be addressed to adequately do the medication correctly.
So what I'm taking away from our conversation thus far is that, you know, science has advanced substantially, and when you're out there and if you're going to somebody to get a diagnosis, is you need somebody who's taking a comprehensive approach and looking at multiple factors here, as opposed to just like looking and asking you a couple of questions like, did you leave the movie real quickly, or have you forgot your keys a few times for the diagnosis, to get it right, number one. But number two is, if you actually get the diagnosis, you need to understand all these other things before, again, we move into what we're going to talk about more next week in terms of medication, because just throwing spaghetti against the wall is not necessarily going to be effective for you unless you really know what you're doing.
Well, I think, unfortunately, that first of all, I want to be really careful about talking about my colleagues, because I think a lot of my colleagues are extremely well-intentioned, they're very well-trained, and they're doing the best they can. What's happened is the science has moved ahead so quickly that a lot of them don't even see the value of brain scans, so they're not even thinking about brain function. They're really stuck in outdated diagnostic codes, which are paleolithic. They're just outdated completely.
And going back to earlier, as many times as the science is moving so quickly that the educations are outdated, so that they're well intended. It's just, I got to believe as a physician, it's kind of hard to keep up with everything that's moving because it's moving so fast. Not like it was 100 years ago.
Absolutely, and that's why I did what I could to make it easy. So my book is really written for the public so that they could actually tell their doctor what to look for. Because now with what's been going on with pharma and the inability to even do, I've done hundreds of pharmaceutical talks since in the mid-90s all around the country. And I love talking to my doctor colleagues, but now with the politics going against, the idea that we would be selling medications, when really what we were doing was some good education. Hey, here's how this stuff works. Here's how you can use it effectively. That's all gone by the wayside. So as a result, everybody's pretty well trying to figure it out for themselves in their office. And nobody writes about this in the journals. How do you use the medications? It's not in the journals.
It's absolutely brilliant. I tell you what I'd like to do is go to our second break, and when we come back, I want to start moving Dr. Parker into, if you're out there, find the right doctor. What do you actually kind of look for to find somebody who's kind of current? So, again, for our listeners out there, if you want to learn more about Dr. Parker, contact him, get his book. If you go to CoreSychBlog.com, that's CoreSychBlog.com. You can get that, and we'll be right back after this message.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention at attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. And we're with Dr. Parker having a fascinating conversation. I think I'm learning more in the last 20 minutes than I have in probably the last couple years.
Thank
Dr. Parker, This is great information, but I got to tell you, in everyday practice, I got people call me wanting some coaching, and a lot of times they'll call me like, I need to go to the right physician. I need to go to the right person who can kind of help me with this diagnosis. And I think it can be kind of challenges. What tips do you have for our audience on how to find the right mental health professional?
Well, if they go over to the blog, I've got a summary of five quick key questions to select an ADHD medical professional. And I'm not going to read that to you because that's kind of boring for really staying alive with the moment here. I think the real thing to look at in a very general way is the fact that what happens is child psychiatrists, for example, very frequently focus only on children. Now, pediatricians, because they're pediatricians, a lot of them know a lot about ADD but don't understand the comorbid conditions that are psychiatrically very relevant, anxiety, depression. And they frequently miss that. It's not their fault. They just weren't trained that way. If you go over to adult psychiatrists, many adult psychiatrists, I mean way too many, don't even think ADHD is a valid diagnostic category. So adult psychiatrists also, and what they're going to do is they'll make the depression diagnosis and miss the ADD diagnosis. Now, so then what happens is people who are child-trained who do adults, and yes, I happen to be one of them, but I'm not, you know, there are many people who are good, even family practitioners, who look at the whole picture and the whole sweep of an individual's development over time. They look at ADHD as a process.
Mm-hmm.
So the deal is not to make a decision based on somebody's superficial qualifications, but based on how they really feel about ADHD as a diagnosis and what they actually know about it. And my feeling is it's absolutely essential to shop somebody up on the phone before you go over and spend some money and talk to them. And I think any physician worth his salt should be able to answer a couple of questions over the phone. You know, we do this all the time at my shop. Hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? We call them in the car going home because we think it's important to be there for individuals who really don't know what to do next because, as I said, it's a very ambiguous situation right now with the changes that are going on with science. So shopping a doctor up is the first thing. I think you also have to have your radar out about being very aware that some docs absolutely think ADHD is a joke. I mean, you know, and the further they are away from psychiatry, if you're a trauma surgeon, you're pretty doggone far away from ADHD. You know, and this is not a person to consult like they know something about it. Like, could I ask you something at a dinner party about ADHD? Don't even bother asking them. They have no idea. It's like, I don't ask people. People come to me. Nobody's going to ask me at a dinner party, what do I think about a bleeding brain? It's not an appropriate question. So I don't answer it, and I think my medical colleagues who don't know anything about ADHD should button their lip and not talk about it because if you don't know something about it, you shouldn't be prescribing the medication, and you shouldn't be actually treating it. It's just one of those things. I don't treat the common cold because I don't think I know enough about it.
Dr. Parker, can you stay a little over for us today? Do you have a pressing engagement?
Sure.
We scheduled the show for 30 minutes, and Mitchell's got a question that I know we're going to lose you in about 30 seconds, Mitchell. If you just come back in our archives, I'll make sure I ask your question so you can see it. But again, the way that this is kind of scheduled, you might lose touch. I'm not 100% sure, but if you lose this, go listen to the archive shows. Like, scroll to 30 minutes and listen to the rest of it. And if you still hear us, it's a good thing. But I just want you to know that I'll get to your question with Dr. Parker in a second. Dr. Parker, going back to kind of what you were talking about, so what I'm hearing you say is in one sense, just feel the doctor out a little bit and ask the questions. And if you had to ask some questions, what are a couple of key questions that you would recommend our listeners ask of
how do you make the diagnosis of ADHD?
Okay.
Yeah, some of them feel that psychological testing is the only way. And I give them a long-distance high five if they even think of that. I mean, that's a good step in the right direction. But in my opinion, and I'm going to irritate some psychologists out there, even the psychologists, and I've worked with some very highly well-trained psychologists, don't understand basic issues like cognitive anxiety. Cognitive anxiety is not on the scorecard in a psychological test. And that's one of the most prevalent, most overlooked subsets of ADHD, is thinking without acting. So psychological testing is important. Doing a good screening is important. Some of the screens are very helpful. But just an idea of, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions and give you medication, that's a bad sign. That's definitely a bad sign. And then, of course, if they raise their eyebrows, joke about it, or want to refer you to somebody else, don't argue with them. Just move on. I mean, you may love them as a person, and I'm sure you do, but that is not a reason to be treated by somebody who really is not aware of that particular protocol. Stimulant medications need to be watched extremely carefully. They need to be dialed in correctly, not capriciously. And comorbid conditions, if they're not identified properly, can be significantly catastrophic. People come out of that, they're diagnosed bipolar for the rest of their lives. They can try suicide because they're not diagnosed properly. It's a big deal, and we need to pay a lot more attention to it than we are.
With these kind of key questions, I was looking through some notes. Let's say you ask the kind of questions and kind of go in the office. One of the things that kind of jumped out at me in some writing that you said that I had seen you is, if you're in the doctor's office, what I read is if the guy kind of comes in and it's kind of like a drive-by diagnosis, or he really doesn't sit down and spend some time asking a lot of questions, not only in the diagnosing process, but also maybe in a medication process, that might be a sign that he's not necessarily really comfortable with it. Or
absolutely. I think it's very key, for example, bringing the child, adolescent, whoever that younger person is, into the process from that first visit. So many people that I see who are children, adolescents, and young adults are absolutely furious with the medical profession because the doctors only talk to their mother and have not talked to them at all the entire time, and they've been in treatment for doggone 10 years. And they come in and they see me and they're looking daggers at me. They hate me and I haven't even done anything. And it has nothing to do with me personally, and I don't take it personally.
Uh-huh.
I just know that if I don't really turn that person around at that moment, they could be that way the rest of their lives.
Wow.
That's a big deal. I've got to overcome a bunch of junk that was done incorrectly previously, and I'm going to overcome it. I'm going to make it happen. But in the meantime, it shouldn't happen that way in the first place.
I want to highlight next week, next week's show is totally dedicated to the diagnosing, the med process, and the adjustments and the art, if you will, of getting it right. So we're not really spending a lot of time on it, but the idea of sitting down, it's just not like you throw stimulants at it and you kind of run on. There's a lot more that you got to look at, and I encourage everybody listening.
Pattern, yeah.
That we're 30 minutes or probably longer. Maybe I should run that to a 45-minute show. It's literally that much time we're going to spend to that for the education. Some other things that I just in reading some stuff is if you're talking to doctors that are talking about like medication holidays or taking some breaks and stuff like that. You've written, you know, ADD is 24/7. If you're dealing with a mental health professional that's talking about those medication holidays and stuff like that, is that a sign that they might be not as current on like a science today?
Yeah, what happens really way too pervasively with pediatricians is they've seen ADHD as an academic enterprise. So we're going to give you medications, and if they run out at 3:00 in the afternoon, no problem. We've done our job. That's ridiculous. It's abhorrent. What happens to the family? I mean, does the family count?
Yep.
Or is it only for school?
Uh-huh.
I mean, basically, the prefrontal cortex works with the family and works with school, and we need to have a little respect for getting the prefrontal cortex balanced in the available time during the day. So having medications that last through the day are really important, and titrating them correctly for the afternoon after school is very important. Now, I'm really a person who doesn't, while I don't like labels,
mm-hmm.
I don't like doing things superficially, I also don't like rules that aren't 100% applicable. Now, yes, there are some people that don't need to take medication in the summertime, but by far, people who have significant attention deficit disorder problems miss the entire 3 months of productive developmental work by just taking a drug holiday. You don't have to do anything.
Yep.
You can be completely irresponsible, and we'll try to make you responsible in September.
Mm.
And, you know, and what happens is the kid gets the message when he's out of school. He's finished high school. He goes to college. Guess what happens? We see by far the most number of people that we see are failures in that freshman year of college. Why? Because the medical professionals have said, take it when you want to. It's not a big deal. No, you just take it for tests. It's not a big deal. Or just take it during during the academic year, but you don't have to take it in the summertime. So they're putting the child in charge of their own medication. Do whatever you want with it. Don't worry about it. I mean, that is significantly irresponsible, in my opinion.
And a few things for our listeners that are listening, paying attention to that. Back August 3rd, I believe, we did a show with Rachel Mation on. She's at Landmark College. She has ADD and struggled herself getting out of high school and college, and actually is at that college and deals with all the incoming freshmen that are ill-prepared. And that show, if you want to listen to it, talks about what Dr. Parker's just speaking to. The failure rate in the first 6 or 8 weeks, I can't remember, is relatively high because they're kind of moving in. Again, I want to get into detail, but it's just something to kind of think about. If you're interested,
I'm going to do a whole DVD wagging my finger at college students. Try to talk them into paying attention to using it responsibly, and here's how you use it responsibly.
Yep. The other thing, too, I want to highlight is we've done a show, I think it was last May, with Gina Pera, and the topic was the impact of ADHD on sex and intimacy. And in the show, we were talking about, you know, meds, people take them during the day, and they come home, and it the bedroom is not an ADD-free zone, and what happens is the meds kind of wear off, and it creates problems between married couples sometimes, and literally sometimes it's good to take fast acting or something at that point in time so that the ADD partner is kind of engaged and not distracted in that process. And I'm only referencing that show because ADD is not necessarily confined just to school or just to work. It really is a 24/7 type thing, and that you need to look at it comprehensively in your life, just not like in those particular areas.
Gina's just a comprehensive person. She covers every detail all the way down to the bedroom. High five, Gina. I mean, it's so true. I mean, if your mind isn't working, you know, in order to have an orgasm, you do have to be able to relax and not be distracted. And part of it is not worrying about what the other person's doing or worrying whether the eggs are cooking or did you shut the refrigerator door.
Yep.
And if your executive function is not working, you can't actually relax to have that orgasm. Yeah, she's making a great point.
And everybody, we're still on the topic of finding the right doctor, I just want you to know.
Yeah, right.
It's as far as we deviate, because the point really goes back is if you're talking to these doctors and it's drive-by or they're not, you're asking these types of questions and it's not there, it's a good indication that maybe their education isn't up to date with current science and that you should be asking more questions or searching high and low to get the right person, to get the right diagnosis, number one. Number two is if you get the diagnosis and stimulants are something that you want to do, again, we'll talk about it more next week, but you can actually dial that in correctly. And I know, well, as a coach, so many people have called me up and they try meds for, you know, 2-3 months and they say they're not working and they kind of give up. And I encourage them, let's go back and talk to your mental health professional about how you're feeling so they can dial it in. But the idea of next week's show is to educate you and also realize that some of those people, you just got to find the right doctor.
Well, I think that last point, Jeff, sorry to interrupt, I'll make it real quick.
Go ahead.
The deal with dialing it in is a reason for us to spend hopefully 45 minutes next time we talk, because the dialing it in, getting the diagnosis correct, and we can go over the diagnosis a little more thoroughly, but dosage strategies are so completely commonsensical. They're so easy, but nobody's thinking about them. It's totally amazing to me. Nobody knows, not nobody, but very few pay attention to what the expected burn rate, what the duration of effectiveness of each specific medication should be. They don't pay attention to it. So the very first question I ask a new person who's seen somebody else, how long is that medication acting? Well, they should be able to tell me immediately. But the standard of care is not there. They have no idea. I have to describe it and go over the details. And well, that's what you – oh, well, maybe this, and then their parents correct them and so on. It's completely fuzzy as opposed to really being precise.
I have a question – I guess two questions left before we kind of wrap things up. One is if you're dealing with the doctors, I've actually heard some people say that, you know, the doctors are – they don't want to prescribe stimulant medications to certain people because it's addictive. And we have this whole issue with regard to controlled substance and ADHD. And can you speak to that space a little bit?
Well, that's another person who is really not keeping up with the literature. I mean, the information in the literature and the studies out of some of the nation's best thought leaders in Harvard, and they've done not just one or two papers on this, there are a number of papers on the fact that individuals who have that executive function in the prefrontal cortex treated adequately, treated correctly, actually are not compelled to use drugs. The drugs, interestingly, stimulate the same receptor sites, but they do so in an even more unpredictable way. Forget what we're doing medically that's unpredictable and not sufficient. But marijuana, cocaine, you know, heroin, benzos, OxyContin, all these things actually stimulate the dopamine pathways in certain respects. So, but you can't predict them, and then they have the physiologic problem of, first of all, just take marijuana, for example. I mean, what's the half-life? Maybe 2 hours?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're going to smoke marijuana to fix your ADD, you have to smoke it all day, and you can't find the bus to go home at night. You know, this doesn't make any medical sense whatsoever from just from a dopamine receptor point of view. And then, of course, it's illegal. It's a, you know, federal offense and all that. But the bottom line is the addictive medications, including alcohol, specifically tickle the same receptor sites. They just do it in inadequate, incorrect, and addictive ways. So a lot of the people who are using substances are, in fact, suffering with attention deficit problems. And if they're corrected early and corrected adequately comprehensively, then the likelihood that they would use drugs is significantly reduced.
So what I'm saying is as opposed to a physician that's worried about the addiction nature, what I'm hearing you say is that particularly younger, stimulant medications can actually reduce a person's propensity.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
To move towards that, to maybe self-medicate.
We see it all the time. We see people who have substance abuse problems come into our office from adolescence, young adulthood, midlife, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, I got my ADD fixed. I just don't feel like drinking the alcohol I was drinking before. I just don't need to."
So
now,
if you're
there are some, you know, it's not a panacea. I don't mean to leave it as a panacea. There's some other very interesting literature that's coming up about dopamine receptors, which I'm going to be writing about. And there are some specific things that can be done to actually support the regeneration of dopamine receptors in a positive way, and which dopamine receptors are affected and all that stuff. It's a little too deep for this moment in this conversation.
Yep.
But there's a lot going on regarding addiction, dopamine, and its relationship with attention deficit disorder. The short message is that if a person has attention deficit disorder and they're correctly medicated, they're much less likely to use substances incorrectly and abusively.
Certainly. So, in summary, in the whole area of finding the right medical professionals, number one, just don't go and sign up. Ask the questions. See if they're knowledgeable. Ask them, how do they go about their diagnosis? Do they do it frequently? When you go in, notice, are they spending a lot of time with you? Are they asking a lot of questions? Are they being real comprehensive about it? Or is it like kind of a drive-by type thing? We'll talk about this next week, but if there is a diagnosis and they do give you stimulants on your reoccurring visit, are they asking some questions, or are they just kind of like just basically asking you generic questions like, how do you feel?
Yeah,
which is not a really
that's
comprehensive question. And if they're talking about, you know, medication holidays or there's addiction issues and stuff like that, we're not saying that they're bad. We're just saying evaluate the source and say, listen, is there education, a 2011 education, or am I dealing with somebody like a 1970s education, just so you got your eyes open? Is that
absolutely.
Before we go, we did have a question that I promised that we would ask. Mitchell had asked, is there a registry of ADHD specialists? How do I find a doctor that keeps current?
That is really a good question. The short answer is no, not to my knowledge. What happens is, in fact, I'm going to actually have a whole training site I'm in the process of developing so I can train people to do this, because I don't think I'm right all the time, but I think I'm right enough that people should be doing it more the way I am than the way they are, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is we're going to train people to do that, and anybody that winds up getting trained will then be – and we're trying to put – you know, the issue is put these people out in different parts of the country as opposed to, you know, hey, send the business my way. I'm happy to have business sent my way, but I think it's going to be much more productive for the public to actually change the way this is taking place by asking their docs the question and their docs getting the information. It's not hard to do. In just a short period of time we've been talking, Jeff, I've hit a number of absolutely essential, easy points for any medical professional to think about. This is not complicated. It's just a question of doing it versus not doing it.
And next week, if you found the right doctor and you get the right diagnosis, I can assure you I've been dying to have the show that we're going to do next week. Not to overemphasize it, but we're going to get in granular detail and empower you with lots of questions and lots of things to challenge your mental health professional, so that if you do that, you can actually empower you to dial that stuff in right and kind of know what's kind of going on and pulling this together. I lost my train of thought. I had a question. One last question. So I guess in summary, the point really is when it comes to a doctor, there's not a list of them that are out there, but ask the right questions, consider the source, evaluate what's going on, make sure that somebody you're kind of comfortable with, and a few other resources is do ask around your community.
Yeah.
And there are a couple places that you can kind of start. I know that Chad has a professional directory.
Chad does have a good list of them. And just to quickly say one other thing, don't be disappointed if the doctor is hooked up with a very deep academic institution. Some of the most paleolithic institutions in the United States are the academic institutions which are not keeping up with the science. They're looking at tenure, they're going through the diagnostic manual and renaming stuff. I mean, the diagnostic manual, the DSM-5, is going to be a complete waste of time for anybody interested in really evolving the diagnosis of ADHD. So the academic institutions, they're exceptions, but what they're doing is they won't even talk to anybody who is actually thinking out of the box. So they're going to stay inside the box. That's
mm-hmm.
their deal.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Parker, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show. I think we've adequately teed up next week. It's going to be an exciting one, I think.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good education.
I appreciate it.
As a reminder, for those who want to learn more about Dr. Parker, contact him or get his book. If you go to coresychblog.com, that's CoresychBlog.com, you can learn more there. And thanks, everybody, for listening to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.